Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, December 6, 2017. A police officer guns down workers at a bakery in Juba, then kills himself.
It may be triggered because of economic depression, or he may have some psychological breakdown. Frustration is there. It is triggered by the environment itself.
And IGAD's special envoy to South Sudan says some member countries have taken sides in the conflict.
Nobody denies that each country has its own interest. But it is not the denial of that interest that matters, but in fact standing together and working together and cooperating for a good faith. That is what is important.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A police officer guarding a bakery in Juba's Muniki Payam killed three civilians and then turned the gun on himself yesterday. As Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba, the South Sudan Police Service have yet to release the name of the attacker.
Eyewitnesses say the policeman locked himself and three bakery workers in a room and demanded to speak to the owner, who apparently failed to pay the officer for his work. They say the policeman appeared to have had a quarrel with the owner of the Lezi's local bakery, who left to run an errand. When he did not return, the officer locked himself in one of the rooms with three male employees. They say another employee who remained outside called the police. About 20 police officers rushed to the scene and tried to convince the off-duty policeman to open the locked door. Farouk Galwango, who runs a shop adjacent to the Lezi's bakery, says the standoff began around 11, but turned violent about 2.5 hours later.
They was there hanging, waiting for the guy to come out. He refuses to come out. Then they brought a tear gas. They pushes tear gas inside. When they pushes inside the tear gas, the guy shooted those three arrested people. I had two like that. He shooted them and killed them.
After killing the three employees, the policeman turned the gun on himself. At that point, police forced their way in and found the four dead bodies. James Duck, deputy spokesman for the South Sudan National Police Service, could only speculate as to why the officer killed the bakery workers.
It may be triggered because of economic depression, or he may have some psychological breakdown. Frustration is there. It is triggered by the environment itself. Because maybe the little he has is not meeting his needs, as well as the position he has. Maybe he has stayed long in one position, or in one area and all that. No motivation and all that. I think this is my own opinion.
Doug says the police are investigating the incident and will follow South Sudanese law regarding compensation.
The trial will take place and then the verdict will be read. What has to be done? Whether the police has to take the responsibility for compensating the victim.
Doug says before any compensation is made, investigators must first determine why the policeman killed himself. For VOA News, I'm Manyang David Mayar in Juba.
IGAD's special envoy to South Sudan admits some IGAD member states have taken sides in the country's conflict. Ambassador Ismail Wise says the interests and actions of some IGAD states are not the official position of IGAD. He says IGAD remains focused on finding a solution to South Sudan's conflict.
Nothing has changed on the position of IGAD. It is to help the people of South Sudan to regain their peace in their country, to become a democratic state in the region, and of course play its right position in this region.
And speaking about South Sudanese, there's also a feeling among South Sudanese that IGAD has no teeth to bite. Hence, its ability to mediate independently is questionable. They're giving example of Uganda. Uganda was involved in this conflict in 2013. They're also saying Kenya has been deporting people who are opposing the government in Juba. And they're saying Ethiopia also has a stake. So how do you say IGAD is speaking with one voice when three of its members have shown their colors?
Nobody denies that countries have their own interest and their stake in one another. Each country has its own interest, but it is not the denial of that interest that matters, but in fact, standing together and working together and cooperating for a good faith, that is what is important. Now, in the current peace agreement and the revitalization forum, the IGAD member states have shown enough signs and have sent to all international community that they are one on the issue of peace in South Sudan.
JMAC, which speaks on behalf of IGAD in South Sudan, it has also its own problems. A lot of South Sudanese have been saying JMAC has not been up to the task.
Well, you know, as a South Sudanese, you know better than what others say, really. GMAC as an institution, and especially the president and the chair of GMAC, is a very integral and very hardworking person. And his report is always black and white, very clear, and he doesn't hide anything. Now, he said in many occasions that he is not only neutral, but he is up to that the people adhere to the peace agreement and that they follow the letters of the peace agreement. It's a reality that a good part of the peace agreement are no more in the country. They are outside the country. Therefore, that it cannot be implemented is also very clear. That is also the purpose that the heads of states of IGAD have decided to revitalize the peace process itself.
You're saying this agreement is not going to be renegotiated. You are going to work on improving it, but it has not worked. So how would it be improved?
Well, it's very simple. First of all, this will be done with the South Sudanese people. They have to own the process, and they have to decide on what should be done in the future. It's very simple. IGAD can only play one important role, that is to bring the South Sudanese people together and help them to work for peace, together with the African continent, together with the United Nations, and the international community at large, who all now support this initiative.
That's Ambassador Ismail Wise, IGAD's special envoy to South Sudan. He spoke with me yesterday from Addis Ababa. One expert on South Sudan is concerned that organizers of the high-level revitalization forum scheduled to kick off next week have not identified what they are trying to achieve. Casey Copeland is a senior analyst at the International Crisis Group. She says the forum participants should address divergent views from the region as well as the parameters and expectations of the forum.
So in many ways, the forum itself was sort of a compromise between IGAD, who, not necessarily that they're happy about what's going on in South Sudan, but they see a slightly different trajectory than the U.S. and some of the other partners. So it's already a compromise. And then once it was approved in June at an IGAD summit, we started to see some quite divergent activities and impressions of what it would be. So we had many people in South Sudan, many people in the region, many people in the U.S., treating it like it was going to be a new mediation, which led eventually to the Ethiopian foreign minister representing IGAD to say, no, this isn't a new mediation. What it's supposed to do is to revitalize the process, look at timelines, try and bring estranged groups into the existing agreement, but not to mediate a new one. So there's quite a tension there between how do you bring new groups into a peace agreement without a mediation. And that's something that no one has really answered.
What are your recommendations?
One of the things I think is most critical, and it's one of the key tasks IGAD outlined for the forum, which is looking at the timelines. According to the current timeline, we should be having an election in South Sudan next year. And unless the high-level forum moves that timeline, we will see some kind of election take place. And I think the general view, even from many people within the transitional government, is that they're simply not, the conditions are just not right. We can, I think, for 100 different reasons, people would really like to see that election delayed a year, if not two. And I think that should be a core priority of the high-level forum. Second to that, there needs to be a rethink of the approach that they've taken, which is the idea that the forum should negotiate ceasefires. And there's an interesting argument for this, which is the humanitarian imperative, that the fighting is inhibiting aid delivery and it's harming the civil population. And all of that's true. So it seems quite logical, right? A ceasefire will stop the fighting and can stop all of these things. And the problem is, if the parties were willing to stop fighting on the terms that they have right now, they would have already. So it's going to be really difficult to get anyone to stop fighting if there's not some kind of political track, if it's not clear what the result of stopping fighting is. Are you talking about stopping fighting for a week, a month, 6 months? And, you know, the worst case scenario is that people stop fighting and actually use the time to prepare for much bigger offensives. And that's something that we've definitely seen in the history of ceasefires in the Sudan. So we also need to be clear that even if we do get a ceasefire that's adhered to, that it's not being used for a slightly different purpose. So I think we really need to put some clarity into the idea that, you know, a ceasefire is a highly political, it's a highly political thing. And if we don't look at it from that lens and really understand what's going on, we're not going to get very far.
It's been said on a number of occasions that this forum is the last chance for South Sudan. Do you share that view?
Personally, I think that's a bit of a silly thing to say. South Sudan is going to exist, whether this forum works or not. And the South Sudanese people are going to continue working for peace. Others are going to continue fighting. What I do think is that there is a sense that that some of the Western partners are not interested in supporting either financially or politically a transitional government if they can't achieve something out of this forum.
That's Casey Copeland speaking yesterday to Ian Bior from London. Some members of the SPLM former political detainees are in Washington to convince U.S. officials that the situation in South Sudan needs urgent intervention. Kosti Manibe says his group is appealing to the Friends of South Sudan in the United States to intervene and rescue South Sudan from its current situation. He says the process to revive the collapsed 2015 peace deal should involve renegotiating parts of the agreement that were never implemented.
We are saying that there are many parts of the agreement that can never be revived, that can never be implemented, because they are either obsolete or the irrelevant. Things connected with security arrangements, with governance arrangements, just have to be totally revised, maybe overhauled, and new ones put in place.
Let me take you back to SPLM reunification.
Yeah.
This is coming from South Sudanese. Majority of them are saying, how can you reunify a party that is already dead? They are saying you are flogging a dead horse.
The initiative on reunification is not coming from us. We are contacted by other parties about reunification. Our principle is that we don't refuse to talk to anybody who cares, so long as the issues of concern to Southerners, which primarily is ending the war, is concerned. If somebody thinks that reunification can end the war and wants to talk to us, we are ready to talk about that.
I was speaking yesterday with the IGAD Special Envoy to South Sudan, Ambassador Ismail Wise. He made a point that I would like to bring to your attention, that the Revitalization Forum is not a process of renegotiating the 2015 peace deal. It's rather looking at it and see what can be fixed. So you are saying here that the forum has to look at other issues and see if it can be renegotiated.
I don't know what is meant about renegotiating and fixing. If something is wrong and you are going to fix it, how do you fix it? Without having a thorough look at it and either removing it, putting something new in its place. That, in my view, does not look so different from renegotiating that component on it. But anyway, when we do get there, we will put our ideas very explicitly and clearly on the table. If you are not going to renegotiate parts of ASIS, if you are not going to correct what went wrong, whether you call it renegotiating it or you call it fixing it, it will not deliver peace.
Mr. Kostimanibe, how would you react to South Sudanese and other critics in the region who are saying the former detainees are just negotiating their way back to power in Juba?
That is absolutely far from the truth. What we want is an end to the war. That is all we are. And we have been willing and able and always talking to people about it.
You have been here in Washington for almost a week now. People listening to my discussion with you in Juba would be asking, what is Kostimanibe doing in Washington?
We are essentially lobbying for others to support the people of South Sudan, bring about peace in the shortest possible time. We are lobbying and trying to mobilize others to weigh in on the government in Juba to be open to talk, to come around the table with an open mind, but beginning from the point of view of admitting that something is fundamentally wrong.
Yes, and what is the response from the people that you have met so far here in the United States? What are they telling you?
Everybody is essentially concerned. They are frustrated. They believe that the situation there is so bad that it cannot, should not be allowed to continue as it is, that it must change. The only question is, how do you change it?
That's Kostimanibe, member of the former SPLM political detainees. He was speaking to me from Fairfax, Virginia, this past hour. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese refugees in Uganda say they want a federal form of government in South Sudan. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you react to criticisms from someone you love?
If it is a positive, I also have to react in a positive way. And if it is a negative, I shouldn't say that I should also react in a negative way, but I should stay calm and see how things move on.
In the first place, it really hurts me that they are criticizing me for something that I think I'm doing right. Later on, I ponder upon what they really said, and then I come back and I apologize.
I just appreciate the person for saying it, because I know that when they criticize, there might be something wrong that I'm doing, and go back and then think about it.
I listen, and at the back of my mind, I'm like, yes, you're telling me all this, but that's your own opinion. That's you, and then that's me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese refugees in Uganda's Adjumani district want to see a federal system of government introduced in South Sudan. They say federalism can put an end to the conflict resulting from an equal distribution of power and resources. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Adjumani in northern Uganda.
Refugees in Adjumani told the team with the National Dialogue's Subcommittee on Refugees and International Outreach that federalism will solve many of South Sudan's problems. Hundreds of refugees from the districts of Amoru, Moyo, and Adjumani participated in last week's meeting. Participant Martin Idor, who represented the Maji settlement, says many refugees have demanded that the country be split up into three federal states.
That is Greater Upper Nile, Greater Barakazal, and Greater Equatorial. So if we want peace, or if we want the future of South Sudan, we want the system of governance has to be brought into federal system of governance.
Callisto Duko is a refugee leader from the Pagirinya camp, which hosts nearly 40,000 South Sudanese refugees. Duko says the people he represented at the National Dialogue meeting unanimously want a federal system of government to prevent a few ethnic groups from dominating political life in South Sudan.
We emphasize on federalism. It should be a federal state that will actually determine economic of that place, and the policy of that place should be by the people of that area.
Deng Dao is chairperson of the Dialogue's Subcommittee on Refugees and International Outreach and head of the delegation to Uganda. Dao confirms refugees want a federal system of governance, but says they are not united on what type of federalism they want.
There are some people who talk about the federal system as the answer to the current crisis, particularly issues that are dealing with the pastoralist communities and farmers. Issues of resource allocations.
Martin Kurtsu, who represented Agodzo camp at the National Dialogue meeting, says some participants broke down in tears as they described how they fled the conflict in South Sudan and their life in the refugee camps.
We are even suffering too much. So that suffering led us to our children get to minorities, and then children are not going to school. A lot of suffering, let me say.
Idro says the meeting was the first opportunity for many refugees to meet face-to-face with officials from Juba since they fled to Uganda more than a year ago. As a result, Idro says many were initially reluctant to share their opinions freely.
In fact, almost all the leaders were afraid, because in South Sudan, there was no freedom of expression which is given to the citizen of the country.
Duko says most refugees were caught off guard because the dialogue team from Juba mobilized the refugees without telling them what the meeting was about.
We were told to go for a meeting in Adjumani. We did not have an idea and we did not prepare even. Yeah, but on the ground we found different things.
Kurtsu says the refugees laid out certain conditions for their return to the country.
We want to see a total peace and accountabilities for what has been done. And the government, what they are doing bad is destruction, raping, doing what a lot of things need to be there to be accounted for.
The refugees say they want to see tangible reforms in the security and economic sectors and an end to impunity for those guilty of committing war crimes and crimes against humanity. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Adjumani.
Comedy can play an important role in sparking dialogue in societies. In many autocratic countries, including Zimbabwe, comedians have tried lightly when it comes to politics. But with the end of the government of former President Robert Mugabe, Zimbabwe's comedians say there is a new sense of freedom of speech. Reporter Kuze Zenevashi recently spoke to several comedians about the changing approach today to teasing politicians and celebrities.
Comedy in Zimbabwe has kept Zimbabweans laughing through the nation's most trying times. Comedian Clive Chigubu talks about the history of the comedy industry in Zimbabwe.
It started off with the Edgar Langeveld way back, but those guys got arrested. Comedy is about revolution. And then after that, then came us in 2008. All these Blawai guys and folks coming together and building up shows. That's where comedy started to really boost up. Right now, it was a bit stagnant because of the cash crisis system, but I'm happy that we have so many young comics that are coming up.
Comedy has played a crucial role in starting social debate in Zimbabwe. Prosper Ngomashi is a comedian whose stage name is The Comic Pastor.
In the past, comedy was regarded as an anti-government thing because whenever you do a political joke, it's regarded as an anti-government. But now, I think there has been change. People have been accepting comedy as it is.
President Mugabe's government had a lot of intolerance for political mockery. Comedian Mandlenko Simate says that's changing and that it's been a struggle. But the comedy business is starting to bear fruit.
Yeah, we've been patient for so long. Since Robert Mugabe was still the president of Zimbabwe, man, we've been receiving threats left, right and center, doing the political jokes and stuff. But now at least everyone now is happy that the comedians can actually do fun jokes about the government and stuff. I think we have now a legal percentage of freedom of expression and speech and stuff.
Mate recalls one time when he was threatened after joking about politics.
Ah, many threats, many threats, especially in Harare. There, I was approached by 5 agents of the water. They were like, boy, come over here. This thing you're doing is not okay. You have to stop it.
Mate adds that businesses are beginning to provide financial backing for comedy. Many companies sponsor comedians to enhance their brand, even using them as commercial ambassadors in advertisements aimed at consumers.
We are receiving a lot of corporates and sponsors so far. It's not officially a job, especially in Harare, not much to say in Bulawayo. Bulawayo with the audience is very hard, but at some point we've infused some people to believe in us and they are now regular customers. But some of them just feel like, what is comedy? These guys just smoke weed and make jokes.
Chikubu says comedy plays a role in influencing the public's perception of politics.
It does play a vital role in terms of politics because we are the commentators. We listen to what people are saying, but as a comedian, there's a line that normal people really stop. As a comic, you continue from that line.
On Saturday evening, Busstop TV, an online program that produces comic skits that go viral online, celebrated its 3rd anniversary with a free show. It's respected for not taking sides in politics, but for skewering all sides of the political spectrum equally.
You guys are celebrating your independence.
Normalcy had finally returned to Harare after days of joyful relief over Mugabe's departure. Chigubu says we will be hearing more political jokes. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinamashe from Harare.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Ending a Ballet Jadid by original Ras Corby. We have been listening to serious song here from Ras Corby talking about Ballet Jadid. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thank you for inviting us into your homes and vehicles. Would like to hear what you think about this show. You can send us an email on southsudan@voanews.com. You can also reach us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.